This is the 20th season of Bass Talk Live. BTL is presented by Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFTCO, Pro Guide Batteries, Spro, Gamakatsu, The Bass Tank, Denali Rods, Beatdown Outdoors, and Sunline.
BTL coming at you.
Good morning and welcome to another exciting edition of BTL Bass Talk Live, where we are going to talk about bass fishing. A little bit of a unique show today. So the Elite Series on the Harris Chain, where the guys were complaining that they're never going to catch any fish and all that stuff. And it looks like it's probably going to take just shy of 20 pounds to win it. John Garrett. I'll just say this right off the hop. So like, fantasy fishing is fantastic. Like, I love it. I've played it. It brings a lot of people into the sport. But when you make a late night change and then the guy that you changed to doesn't catch him and the guy that you changed out like is going to win the tournament, you just have an unhealthy dislike for the angler that you selected like how in the hell did you not catch these fish? Because I could have had an additional 200 points and all the glory and honor and prestige that comes along with a solid fantasy fishing finish. And I took out John Garrett at like 11:30 p.m. after I did Andrew Upshaw's Open Pros pick him and talked about why John Garrett was going to do so well and that he was my pick, and I was riding John Garrett to the victory in this deal. And then I put in Chris Zaldane, and then he misses the cut by 3 ounces, and I'm buddies with Chris, but right now he is in the doghouse with me. Like, how in the heck? What the heck, man? It's unhealthy. I wonder if the anglers, we'll bring our guest in right off the hopper today. We got Patrick Walters. Patrick, are you aware of the intense feelings that ardent fantasy fishing players have towards anglers based on their performance on a weekly basis?
Without a doubt. I was actually kind of worried you were talking about me.
No.
You were like, yeah, took him out. And because I did not do good at Harris Chain. That place has got my number. And it's definitely, you can tell when people are all like, you pass somebody on the wall, they're like, I got you on my fantasy team. You better catch them. And it's like, they're kind of cheering for you, but they're like telling you, like, hey, you better catch them. Like, it's like they got everything riding on it. Like, they got the house riding on this fantasy team.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, I mean, there's not much on it. But, you know, next week I'll pick Chris. He'll have a good tournament and he'll be out of the doghouse and right back to the top. Little bit of a unique tournament this past week. We got a lot to talk about. I mean, I'm kind of lucky to have you on right now. The final day is going on over on Bassmaster. I know there's a bunch of people that split screen when this kind of stuff goes on. Oh, Patrick is gone. That means he must have had he's back. A lot of different things going on, but day one postponed, probably the best postponement in the history of the Elite Series. Would you say that in your 5+ years on the Elite Series, this was the one day you woke up and went, yep, glad I'm not out there?
I was glad about that one because I was thinking about it. The people who have to go through the door canal and stuff, it was high winds. I mean, it was blowing 30 to 40, gust into 50s. Like, there's a lot of low-hanging trees in that area. Like, a tree could have fell on somebody or something. The little things you don't think of, not even just the lightning storm that come through. I mean, that was a good one. No, that was the day we still went fishing. Me and Hamner did on our off day somewhere else, but I was glad we weren't fishing the tournament that day.
Full field fished then the 2 days. They did it just like it, but as a result, only 10 anglers on the water. Pretty much, if you were a rookie in 2024, it seems like you're fishing on every single Sunday, Monday, whatever. Now, if you look at the angler of the year, I mean, you're not that far removed from being a collegiate angler who came onto the Elite Series in what, 2019. Yep. What are your thoughts through three tournaments when you look at the angler of the year standings and you look at how these tournaments are shaken down of the 9 guys that have come out of the opens last year? There's no other word other than dominant that comes to my mind. Is that impressive to you as well? I mean, you're not that far removed from that whole collegiate scene and you're still a young dude. So do you relate to them? Are you impressed with it? Are you surprised?
I'm not really surprised by it. I feel like when you come out of that scene, you just come to the opens, they have that mentality. They have that work mentality. Like, they did everything they could to get there, and they're still, I mean, they're firing on all cylinders right now. And so they're fired up. It's something new. They're excited about it. And so they got the momentum. That's the thing. So that's why it doesn't surprise me that they're catching them. And they're great anglers. I mean, they know how to catch them. They've fished against a tough group of guys in the opens to get here. And so that's why it's kind of, I was telling Hannah too, I kind of been kind of lazy about it. You know, like my fishing research has gone down, I'm going to say 90%. Like I have done any fishing research. Yeah. In probably a year and a half, where I was used to doing like nonstop. I was pre-fishing. I hadn't pre-fished a place in probably 3 years. It kind of gets you fired up again. And that's what you need, is you need those young guys to come in there to kind of light that fire under you. Because I feel like this is like my second or third year, but it's actually my sixth season on the Elite Series, which sounds insane. So you kind of, once you've done it a couple years, it kind of, you get in a routine, and that sometimes that's good, sometimes that bad, but you kind of know what to expect. And that's what's good when you got those, that fresh group of anglers to come in there to kind of fire you back up. I was on the phone with Hammer yesterday, and he was like, man, I was pretty hot. I didn't make the cut, and it was like, all right, we gotta change some things up and get back to work.
When you say fishing research, obviously there's more to fishing research than just pre-fishing or going to pre-practice before that event goes off limits. What do you kind of break down what you
I'm
mean
talking
by
about even looking
research?
Like tournament results, looking at the map, looking at fishing reports. You know, you can type in like, if we're going to Lake Murray, you know, Lake Murray tournament results, what are the fishing reports doing, what's the water temperature, that kind of stuff. I've just been showing up, you know, and
like 100% just looking at the schedule and going, this is where we're going, and then
and
showing
this is
up.
When we'll be, yeah. And I ask my wife sometimes, I'll even forget, like, when are we going to that body of water? Like, just getting lazy on it. See, just, and sometimes it works that, like, you just show up and you just stumble across them, and sometimes it doesn't. So that's what I mean. Like, it's going back to doing a ton of research again, and not necessarily a ton, but a happy medium for you. Everybody fishes different, and you kind of got to find your strength and your weaknesses on that.
Okay, this is a perfect time to ask this, because I've always believed that the anglers who have been incredibly consistent over time go to every body of water and they have a routine or a system that they then implement on that body of water that allows them to be consistent. I call it I use like the spoken hub theory for like what Brian Thrift has been able to do over his career. Do you have that same thing where even though you're not paying attention to the tournament results, that you have a system that when you launch your boat on the first day, you say, okay, this is a natural lake, this is a highland reservoir, this is a man-made, and then you just apply that system. Drew Gills talked about like what he's doing over on the BPT and MLF. Like, he's got a system that do you do that same thing, or are you literally just launching your boat and then fishing by feel?
I'm way more by feel, I would say. Wow. I even though at the St. John's we've been here 5 times, I've fished it different every single time. I haven't fished the same area twice. It's just kind of, you usually think it's like, all right, what time of year are we going to be there? It's so it is, you do put those variables into play. You do have kind of like a mental checklist of like, all right, spawn, pre-spawn, post-spawn. And then you check one of those boxes are, and that they should be, if they're spawning, you know, they're going to be using these general areas. Like they should be in dead end canals. They should be in creeks. They should be in pockets, that kind of stuff. And then you kind of go from there. I typically always start shallow. As shallow as you can, not as shallow as you can get, because sometimes you got to go shallower, but I typically start shallow and then work my way out. And I don't start deep or start offshore, just because it's like, I enjoy fishing shallow. I think it's easier to break down and then kind of progress out deep if I think those fish are up there. It's really just kind of, you just throw enough stuff at the fan and then something will stick eventually.
You make that sound really easy, but you realize like for 99.9% of anglers, like that is a recipe for just absolute total disaster.
100%. Talking with Hammer about it, because Hammer traveled with me now for 3 years, and I'll be on the phone with him and he's like, Patrick, I can't decipher what you're talking about. Because I'll just say, yeah, I said, dude, I think I know what the deal is. I think it's swimming and jig. And we were at the TVA one time, I was like, it's swimming and jig on docks. And he's like, okay. Like, and he goes and tries it. We were in practice. And he calls me back 2 hours later, and he's like, dude, I hadn't had a bite doing it. Have you done anymore? I said, oh, no, I hadn't even done that. I'm out here graphing schools. Like, and he's like, Patrick, I don't even know what you're talking about. But, like, I just get, like, random ideas in my head, and then you just kind of go with it. And I think you got to fish fast, because Thrift's always said you can make 99 wrong decisions in a day. All you do is make one right one. And so it's like, I go with that mentality of in, out, in, out, in, out, in, out, you know, fishing deep, fishing shallow until you just kind of stumble across something. And I don't have to catch them in practice. I just mainly, I want to cover the entire, like, I want to see every inch of that body of water. And I just have to see it on pad. You can just see the water clarity, if the grass is right, if the forage is there. And now with forward facing sonar, I mean, you can just scope them. All right, there's fish there. I mean, if you can get a reaction on one or two, then you just, you make a lot of mental notes back. Okay, I think that area really did have a lot of fish in there. And then you just go back in the tournament, and that's when you really figure them out and try to catch them. And that's why you never really know in practice what you're on. I don't, at least. It's like, it could be a big bag of fish, could not be. And then in the tournament is when you really have to figure them out and see what's there.
So is that ability, do you think that is a talent that you were born with?
Pure ADD.
No, what I'm saying is, what is it? Is that a time on the water thing? Is that a way that your brain works differently than other people? Because, I mean, there's a ton of people who just get on the water and try to do that and don't end up at those same conclusions. Like, I've got some stats here, and after you answer this question, I'll run it through that kind of will explain why I'm so intrigued with this kind of method that has been so successful with you since your days of being guided by Get His Brain In Around
as
around
Robert,
the old Gamecocks fishing team there. Yeah, he's about 4 now. Years away from being governor of South Carolina.
I think he is. You're right. It would not surprise me, Matt.
Did he carry you, or did you carry him to all those W's for the Gamecocks back in the day?
It was a team effort. Always is.
Okay. Anyway, but I'm just saying, how much of that is time on the water? Like, do you spend, and did you spend an inordinate amount of time on the water? Is it something that's always just kind of come naturally to you that you've been a fishy dude?
Well, you know, always growing up fishing, I saltwater fished prior, but I think time on the water is a large factor. And that's the one thing in the last 3 years or so, I hadn't fun fished as much at home. When I get home from a tournament, it's just like I put the boat in the garage and I don't fish until the next one. So I feel like it is a little bit of just the fishing instincts of, it is time on the water. Like, you have to dial that stuff in and you just gain that over time. And then just, I don't know, just naturally thinking of like, where should they go and what should they be doing? Just looking at all the variables. I think a lot of times too, fishermen, they're not observant a lot of times. I think you got to be looking at everything around you. I mean, I'm looking at the sky, looking at the clouds, looking at the trees, looking at the wildlife. I mean, everything tells a story. I mean, you know, when the cows are laying down when you're on the way to the lake, they're probably not going to bite.
You believe that?
I do believe that. It's a pressure.
What does that
thing.
Mean? The cows are laying down. So how are you going to adjust your day on the water? Just some lethargic cows in the pastures.
I'm going to go get a reaction bite. I'm going to go throw a chatterbait or something, and I'm going to have to trigger one. You know, I'm not going to be able to skip a jig, and he's not going to be eating that thing. It's a, you just change differently. You really have to get there. That's why sonar helps now too, because you can see how fish are reacting and you can see what their moods are. But it's just, I think the pressure, barometric pressure, is a much larger factor than people give the fish credit for. I think that's what dictates whether they bite or whether they don't bite, because there'll be times in a day, and we've all seen it, where they'll just randomly start chewing at 10 o'clock. Sometimes they're chewing at first light and then they won't bite again till 1 p.m. You know, they have that midday lull. Sometimes it's 10. It's just like a big deer, you know, trying to kill a mature buck. It's like they walk on high pressure, but bass are the opposite. They don't like high pressure. They like low pressure. It's just random things. You can tell when it's just like a muggy day, like you're about to catch them on top water.
I just had someone on BTL. I'm going back through my list to see who I had on that was just talking with me about how they don't believe in any of that stuff and they got to fish anyway. So they don't even look at the barometric pressure. They don't,
I don't look at
the moon phase. They don't do any of that because they're like, hey, I got to be on the water anyway.
I 100% agree with that as well. See, that's why I'm on both sides of the fence. I believe it makes a difference, but I'm still going to fish because it's like when I'm fishing for a living, I'm fishing tournaments. I've got to fish in those conditions. So you have to figure it out. So it really doesn't matter. You just kind of got to know like, hey, what's it going to do? And then it might make you change your approach a little bit. Like, okay, this area might've been really fishy and it has the fish in there. They just weren't biting at that time because the conditions weren't right. So mentally I'm going to make, no, I need to come back through there the second time. that okay. kind of stuff. It's not like, oh, I'm just not going to go fishing today because okay. it's like we got tournaments. So it's a mixture of both of like, I don't look at the pressure on my phone and be like, all right, it's 30.1, man, it's pretty high today, you know, or the moon. I do believe in the moon phase for spawning fish, but other than that, it is what it is. Like I only look for a newer pool.
Emil was talking about that. Really good up and coming angler out there in the Carolina. You know Emil.
Yep.
He's in your neck of the woods, isn't he?
Yep. Lives on the near.
So you're a moon phase spawning guy and not a length of daylight spawning guy, because that's the other debate you could get into.
Yeah, length of day, it's makes a difference. I think water temperature and moon, I would say. And honestly, when you go down there and when you spot them with your eyes, then it's like, all right, it's time.
I'm not going to disagree with you, and this is why. I'm a stats guy. I love stats. I think it's one of the few objective ways to determine how good an angler is over time. You only have, listen, you only have 80 BASS events under your belt, 70 checks. What percentage of the time, and now this includes 2 years of opens and then all of your Elite Series tournaments, classics, what percentage of the time would you say you finish in the top 30? Give me a percentage. Top 30 finishes. Yeah. And that includes the opens and everything.
40% of the time?
57% of the time you're in the top 30. You have to be one of the youngest guys without a classic or an angler of the year to reach the $1 million club. You did that at the end last year when you won. You had $130,000 win, $30,000 with angler of the year to make it. I'm impressed that your wins are so. Edwin to me was impressive because he won in at the Ozarks, in Florida, up north, East Coast, all over the place. You have a Louisiana win, a Texas win, a South Carolina win, and a New York win. How important is it to you that you've won on drastically diverse fisheries across the country?
You know, I never really think about it. It's just, I used to have like a preference of like, you wanted to fish at home, but I don't care where they're at as long as you can catch them and figure them out. This northern one probably means the most to me right now. They all probably change in your mind over time. Just because of how hard smallmouth fishing was for me. And when I say for me, it was because I was making it hard on myself. It's because I didn't know how to do it. The only time I'd go up there smallmouth fishing was in an Elite Series tournament, basically, or an open. And so I'd have 3 days of practice, and how I would practice is not, I would practice to find fish, or, you know, and I wouldn't try to figure them out. And so I didn't know how to catch or find the big fish. And then honestly, like 2 years ago, we went up there and I stayed a whole entire month. Like we traveled, me and dad, to like six different bodies of water. And all we did was just throw a spinning rod for a month until we figured them suckers out. And so going up there for 7 days in a tournament format, you don't sit there and just have fun and go fishing. And that's kind of that's why that northern one means the most to me. But I still remember winning at the Red River, just how dry. I think I won with 30 pounds. I mean, that's 10 pounds a day. Like, it was tough. Just drastically how far they've kind of changed.
How hard is it going back to the St. Lawrence every single year now that there's been live coverage on it for the past 8 years, where everybody knows exactly what everybody's doing, where everybody's doing it, how the fish are caught, who's going to catch them, where they're going to catch them. And it seems like that would be really difficult to have success up there with so much history and everybody knowing the game plan.
Kudos to the Johnston brothers. I don't know how they do it because A, they top 10 every time.
Yeah.
B, they do it in different areas, and it's just, and sometimes it's not different areas. Sometimes it's the same areas, but it's like you said, I caught them in a different area last year than anybody's really caught them in the past, but that's where I caught them 2 years ago. And I just didn't like throttle on them because I thought I had some other stuff. Yeah. But now that everybody knows that area, Kyle Welcher was over there as well. It just kind of, that area is going to get all the pressure now. So it's like, you kind of got to do something different. Live does make it extremely hard to duplicate your success. Like you were saying earlier, like thrift and stuff back in the old days with FLW and all the bass stuff is like those guys would go back to those same lakes and they could catch them on the same point, same pattern, same deal.
No one
like
knew they were there.
Nobody knew it. And so it's like they had it to themselves. The only people that knew like was like the guy who drove by and seen them on that spot, really. So that's really kind of, it makes you have to work a little bit harder because you had to find new fish. You just can't go right back to the same spot. And it's like, oh, well, they're here again, you know? So it definitely live makes it a little more difficult because like you said, it's just, we're in the time of technology right now. It's information overloaded. So everybody knows everything and it's, there's no secrets out there.
Okay. How does that work then? And I know this is like on the water stuff. So it, go into it if you don't, but you win off of a spot or someone wins off of a spot. It's on live. Everyone knows where it is. You go back to that lake the next year. You got 3 days of practice to figure it out. Is that spot fair game? Do you roll by and say, hey, the hell are you doing here? You know, this is my juice. Get the hell out of here. Like, how does that work on the water amongst, I mean, because you, I would imagine on one side, you got guy doing, hey, I did my friggin' homework. And on the other side, you're going, hell, the only reason you're here is because I was here last year. How does that work between the 104 of you guys on the water going back to the same fisheries?
It really is a toss up. And it depends on the type of spot it is. Because a lot of times I'm like, hey, dude, pack your stuff up, you know, get off the hole. And a lot of times, I mean, it'll be something obvious. And so it is kind of fair game. But at the same time, it's, I feel like there's a lot of unwritten rules in bass fishing that just have kind of gotten forgotten. Because to me, it's a, like a respect thing. Like if Jason Christie caught him in on this point or in this creek or something, you know, and he's going back in there and he won the tournament there, I'm not going to fish that. That's just like, I mean, with Gussie at the Classic, mm-hmm. it's, I found those fish in the Elite Series tournament and started there and beat him and Zaldane. I was the first one there between the three of them. I caught me three little keepers and they pulled in there and I was like, I'm left because I had to go run on my other stuff. Gussie cracks him that first day. And I said, good job, Gussie. Like, I'm not going back no more because
not
you got
the
a classic.
This is the original is Elite the Series original. One where he blew everyone away.
Yep, he blew it out. And I told him, and he's, I was like, well, I'm not going to go back if you, because I don't have a chance to win. Like, you got a chance. Yeah. And that's, feel like that's how fishing should be. It's like, should be people kind of looking out for everyone.
So then
else
you didn't go not, back. So the Classic was there then.
Never,
you
never
found that fish. You were there yep. before them. You had never caught fish there. And you knew that there was a high percentage chance that that tournament would be won doing that out of that spot. And you yep. just said, not my fish, not my deal. I'm letting them have it.
Letting them have it. Cause it's like, also I knew that there was going to be 10 other boats in there with them trying to do the same thing and mm-hmm. trying to, I'm not necessarily going to say poach, but being there on top of them. And I don't like fishing in a crowd. I like doing my own thing. I don't want to be fishing next to people. And it's just, and sometimes that costs me a lot because sometimes a bomb, I mean, I did not do good at that Classic either. And sometimes it's a pride thing, I guess. I don't know why.
That's interesting. I like that. I do also like your shirt there. That's your Classic edition shirt. We're going to take a first break. Oh, before we take our first break though, Hamner told me that you were the most nervous he has ever seen you before a tournament, before the takeoff at Grand, that Hamner had this inner calm that suddenly decided to come over him on Friday morning at Grand Lake, where he's like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'll catch 20 pounds a day. And he went over to chat with you like he does before every tournament, and that you were just a nervous wreck. Is that accurate?
I don't want to say a nervous wreck, but I was definitely moving frantically than usual.
Oh, there you go. You're back.
Did it kick me? There we go.
No, I got you.
You got me?
Yep. You weren't a nervous wreck or you were?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
I can't log hear
out,
you.
Log out, log back in. We're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we'll answer that question with Patrick Walters. It's BTL on a Monday. Man? Yeah, can you hear me now? It's BTL on a Monday. We'll be back right after this.
The new Puma STS has been redesigned from the ground up. With the angler, design, function, and performance in mind, nothing on this new offering was compromised, and the only thing carried over from the previous version is the name. Based on the Soft Touch Series hull that started with the flagship Jaguar, this new model is nimble and performs incredibly well at all speeds with either a 250 or 300 horsepower engine. Featuring a new 96-inch wide body footprint, this hull measures out at 20 foot 7 inches in length. Industry-leading design coupled with tournament-winning performance. The Puma STS from Bass Cat. Feel the rush.
Gamakatsu, the innovation leader in fishhooks, is launching Nano Alpha technology in 2024. Nano Alpha is a new finish available on Gamakatsu's most popular hook styles. It delivers 2 times slicker performance, 4 times better corrosion resistance. Nano Alpha technology makes the world's greatest fish hooks even better in 2024 to help anglers catch more fish.
Born in Japan, using technology, innovation, and precision, Sunline produces the widest selection of fishing lines at the most technologically advanced line factory in the world. Manufactured at the strictest tolerances to produce victories at the highest levels of tournament bass fishing. From household names like Christie, Swindle, and Cruz, to young guns like Cook, Logan, New, and Welcher, they all trust Sunline to take them to the top of the leaderboard. Choose the line that will give you the strength to guarantee your confidence. Sunline.
All right, we're back with Patrick Walters. Can you hear me now, Patrick? If Patrick can't hear me now, I'm going to tell him to log out and then log back in. There you go. How about that for some technology right there? It's BTL on a Monday talking with Patrick Walters, and I find it interesting the way that he is able to make everything sound so simple. We haven't even gotten into the other side of things, which is the NPFL that he's fishing, which is 4 to 6 tournaments a year. So even though he may not be doing a lot of research, he is big on time on the water and competition, and he's done really well over on the NPFL. You see he's brought a bunch of other Elite Series anglers back over to there. How about now? You got me?
I got you now. I got to change my microphone.
Yep, he's going to change his mic.
There we go.
All right, and then go horizontal with the phone, and we're back.
Yep. My dad called me. I did have it on Do Not Disturb. I don't know how.
Oh, that's weird. Anyway, okay, so we were talking about, Hamner was saying that you were just a nervous, ready. It was shocking to him. Like, it actually really surprised him that you weren't, like, calm and dialed in like you normally are. Is that an accurate description of day one at Grand?
Basically. I wouldn't say I was super frantic, but for some reason, we got there super early, and it, like, wasn't supposed to rain, and so I'm trying to break all my rods out. I had a live camera in the boat with me that day, and, like, there was so much going on. I'm trying to get all my rods out. It's raining, and I was like, I'm not going to put my bibs on. You know, I'm going to ride it out, and then it starts really raining, and now I'm, like, soaking wet, and I'm just wearing pants that day, too. That was probably where I messed up. I wore pants, but I'm breaking all my rods out, and then we're trying to get my graph plugged in. And it was just so much going on. And you kind of, I'm always in a hurry for some reason. And I just felt like it was like, all right, I got to hurry, get all this stuff done and get ready for blast off. Mm-hmm. And just, you get caught up in that, like, whirlwind where you're like, oh gosh, I just need to slow down. And you can tell it, but when you can tell, it's already too late. You've already got there. The snowball has already rolled.
We mentioned Hamner a couple times. All right, I wanted to dive into this because this might be the most unique house since I think it was like Velvic, Skeet Reese, and John Murray in the 1990s. Now, not as probably chaotic and debaucherous as that trio back in the day on the West Coast where Murray was winning a boat every single week. But it's you. So just as a whole, it's you, Hamner, Cobb, Shane LaHue,
yep,
and Clint Davis.
Yep. Full house.
So how did you guys end up on that group of five?
Well, me and Clint always camped side by side. This last year was the first year we switched to Airbnbs. And what it was me and Hamner always would travel together. And then it was like, well, it was kind of to the point, the camping deal was kind of getting hard to, like, for kind of arrangements for everybody. And yep. So it's like, we'll start Airbnb, and Shane and Cobb always traveled together. And then we kind of were like, well, we might as well, we all talk to each other. And it's like, well, we might as well just.
Oh, now I don't have audio. This is the problem. I knew he would get tons of phone calls. He's going to log back out and log back in. At least we get Patrick Walters on a Monday when they're supposed to be practicing on the St. John's River. Something else I wanted to ask him about is that is a massive fishery that they're headed to next week. And it's kind of the midpoint of the Elite Series season, which is hard to believe that it's already four tournaments in. Next week will be the midpoint of the Bassmaster Elite Series season. And they're going to get 2 days of practice on that. Everyone, you know, before it used to be you go down, you bed fish in the eelgrass. I think it was down on Lake George. And then it was either that or a shell bed deal. But all right, you're back.
Okay. He must have killed a turkey or something because he keeps calling me. I texted him and said, I'm on a podcast.
No, it's all good.
I'll call you back.
It's all good.
But we all decided it was like we all talked to each other. Might as well stay. It is hard to get a house that fits five boats, though. That's the most difficult thing. But it is it's a diverse group. I'll say that.
We're rolling with that in the opens. We got either four or five boats, and it is. I literally have a buddy, Darren. Shout out to Darren. If you guys need any plumbing in Central Illinois, check out Gates Plumbing in the Decatur area. But he literally was like, dude, I know how you're organized and how like I roll with Upshaw and them. And he's like, I know none of you guys plan ahead, so I'll just book your houses and then you can just, it's been the greatest thing ever so far.
That's what it takes. It takes one person that really like in a timely order, like mm-hmm. I'll book all the house, do all this. And it's perfect because that's like a lot of us are like, oh, like I'll just book it a couple days ahead of time, you know? And it's, that typically does not work.
Okay. I want to dive into this. So how did you get hooked up with Hamner? Because he's Alabama and you're South Carolina. Was that just a deal where you were like, just started talking on the Elite Series or?
No, we actually met way before the Elite Series when we were fishing the Opens. I met him. We were fishing a Toyota at Lake Okeechobee.
Oh, wow.
It was the one that he finished second in. That was only was actually the tragic Okeechobee event. Now that I think about it, it was the one where they canceled the tournament.
Yeah, it was one day.
Yep. I don't remember what year that was. That's when I met him. And then what happened was he was fishing, I think it was the Toyotas. They went to Santee after that. And my buddy Carl had met Hamner. I don't know how those two met. I guess it was through the Toyotas. The next event was at Santee Cooper. And he needed a place to stay. And I was like, yeah, you come just stay at my house. And so he stayed with me in that tournament. It was him. It was Hamner, Bradley Dortch, and somebody else. And so we all stayed at the house. It was a different group. And that's when I met him. And we kind of hit it off from that day. Like once he stayed at the house, we kind of were like, man, we're both kind of like-minded. We like fishing. And it was kind of hit it off from there. And we started fishing the Opens and then just kind of kept in touch and traveled through the Opens. And then once I made the Elites, it just spiraled from there.
Okay, so you are one of the first guys. You're the jerk bait with the forward facing sonar, what I call like an aggressive kind of a hybrid live scoper. Obviously Hamner just won a Bassmaster Classic doing that. Is that something that you guys kind of developed together? Were one of you doing it first? Like, how does that work? Because now if you think jerk bait, shallow scope, aggressive fish, obviously with what's been going on, with what we've been able to watch on Bassmaster Live, like you guys are two of the best that have ever done it.
I think we piggyback off of each other. We both threw jerk baits before forward facing mm-hmm. sonar ever come out, and that's why we both loved them, and that's why when forward we started using it. I got live scope for first. It was the old transducer. And I was telling him about it. I said, dude, this thing's the deal. You know, like, man, I really like this thing. And he got my boat and we played with it. And then I switched sponsors. I didn't run LiveScope anymore. And he got it that off season and was playing with it in the wintertime. And he was like telling me all these stories. And I'm like, Hamner, you're killing me. And so like he started learning it. And then like halfway through the year, he's like, man, like tell me all this stuff. It's like, dang, I got to get it again. Like, yeah. I was like, I don't need it. Like I can catch them without it. And, you could just tell, like, there were so many situations, like, man, I could have probably used it there, and he's telling me about it, and so then I get it back, and then we always teach each other something different about it, and, like, we both always love jerking. He always fished timber because he fished on Lay Lake. And I never really fished the timber as much. So he kind of opened the timber side to me with it. And I kind of, it's weird how we just kind of teach each other just little niche things like that.
So you guys will have like in-depth discussions on how fish react to the bait, or a bait that slowly sinks, or the attitude of the fish, or how far you can get them to come, or whether you want a deep diver or a shallow diver or a rattle or a silent. So you guys are sitting there just breaking it down piece by piece until you find, and each one of you is learning from each other. So like if you're at a tournament like this and then you've got like Cobb sit, what is Cobb doing? Is Cobb just like over there tying his swim jigs on and looking for the shallowest flats that he's like sight fish with a wacky rig?
Yeah, he's like,
he's not good. He's not into that stuff, is he at
he's
all?
He's actually a big time gamer, and he is so good at live scope, he hates it. He said the only time he likes using forward facing sonar is if he was gonna fish something that he was already gonna fish, like a brush pile. Like, yeah, then he'll use it. He doesn't want to go out in the middle of the lake and just go and just scan out in the abyss looking for floaters or anything. He wants to go throw a buzz bait and a wacky worm on the bank. And I don't blame him, because that's how we grew up bass fishing. And that is kind of what, that's the, that brings the fun back in it. When you can just go out there and you can catch them, just kind of the nostalgia ways, I guess. I mean, that's bad when it's like,
well, I mean, he's pretty damn good at it.
He is really
good. He's like the best. Like, you've got some of the best like scopers offshore, like probably one of the top five shallow water guys in the world right now.
Oh, if they're on a buzz bait, he is going to crack them. Even if they're not on a buzz bait or they're up shallow, like, he's still going to compete with it. It's just so hard right now. The weights are, we're fishing for fish that haven't been fished for in a long time. Really, it's kind of like the fish that the A-rig was catching. That's what we're catching all using forward facing sonar. And it's just, the weights are so good, it's hard to compete. And we always thought the bank fishing was going to get better, that it's like, everybody's going to fish offshore, bank fish is going to get it. I don't really think it's going to. I think we're catching them before they get there. And so it just kind of maintains the pressure on them that they don't get up there and get comfortable. Their safe space was out there in the middle of the abyss, and they don't really have a safe place anymore.
What's the furthest you've ever had a fish come and wreck a jerkbait?
Like how far he tracked it, or how far?
Like how deep a fish was where you put a plug over his head, and he saw it, recognized it, came up, and then trucked it.
12 foot does not surprise me at all. I'm probably going to say like 14 to like 16 feet probably, but that's clear water. Like he vertical. Yeah,
that is a long way.
It's a long way, but that's clear water. Like when you go some places, it's like, it's usually smallmouth that do that. Like they, when they see that thing, they're like, they're in route. I mean, here comes a tomahawk. And you're just like, get ready. Like, you're just grinning. Like, don't let up, because he's going to lock on.
I know you don't like talking about this stuff, but so I talked with Wheeler about it last week when I had Jacob Wheeler on before he blew everyone away at Dale Hollow. No, like, dude, listen. I have the after I let you go, I'm going to do a final segment that right now we're in the midst of the greatest run in the history of professional bass fishing. We'll get to those stats later. It's mind-boggling. But I asked him about there's a path of every lure where it like reaches its peak and then it plateaus and it starts to go down, and he said that he thinks we're 2 years away from the peak of the minnow bite, the jig head minnow. What do you think that trajectory is for the jerk bait, and are there certain baits that fish cannot become conditioned to because of instinct?
A worm is one they cannot become conditioned to. Like, there's an old book out there and it talks about it. Like, a big fish, like, they don't relate worms, like Texas or anything like that, any kind of soft plastic, to danger. But hard baits, they, after they've been caught one or two times, they can relate that to danger. Like, they know, like, I'm not going to bite that. The jerkbait bite has already changed. It's not as easy to catch them on it as it was 3 years ago. 3 years ago, I mean, you just threw that sucker out there and it hit the water and you had one. I mean, it was like, here we go. And then when you could use it with forward, it was lights out. That's why it was so good. So I don't think we're that far, honestly, from the jerkbait bite. The thing why the jerkbait still catches them as good as it does is you can prolong your cast. I mean, you can leave it in their face. You can throw it anywhere. You can throw it deep. You can throw it shallow. That's why they bite the jerkbait so good. The minnow bite doesn't surprise me about 2 years at all. It's so lights out, and there's so many people starting to do it. After a period of time, they're going to get keyed in on it. It might last. I think it might last longer than that because it's so it's like eye motion half the time. It's so non-intrusive that I feel like it feels kind of safe to them. It's not aggressive. It doesn't have rattles. It's not a hard bait. Where like jerk baits are erratic. It's hard action. Sometimes you can hear it. I think they'll be off the jerk bait before the minnow.
Do you mess around with like dozens of different ones and hooks and weights on it? Or do you just have a couple that are your go-tos? And if they eat that, they eat that. Cause so in the opens, I'm right now trying to figure out, do I just stick with one or two that I know they eat? I change my cadence and I can either get to them or I can't, or do I drop $5,000 on every type of jerkbait that's ever been made with every flash roll, wiggle, bill, and one day?
I would get you a couple staples. You need probably like four or five different ones.
Okay, so it is a handful.
It is a handful. It's not a whole bunch. I wouldn't go buy every jerkbait out there, but you do have to kind of find. I have bought every jerkbait out there, I feel like. And I do try them, but then there'd be like four or five staples that I have. But they're all for different applications. Baits are tools. That's how I look at them. One's a 10 millimeter wrench. One's 3/8. One's a pair of vice grips. One's a flathead screwdriver. You know, each one does something different, mm-hmm. whether it's depth I'm fishing, whether it's the forage they're eating, whether it's the type of cover I'm fishing. So you kind of have that tool for that job. And that's where I kind of apply them. It's not really a one fix all.
That's interesting because jerkbaits are one of the few that are like that, where they all look similar, but there's some mm-hmm. that you're a Rapala dude, right?
Yep.
And Rapala has like eight different types of jerkbaits just in their lineup.
I know. And see like the little Shadow Rep Shad, I love that for shallow water because I can work that thing in like 2 foot and less. So it's like when they're super shallow, I can keep it up there. And then you got like the Shadow Rep Deep, which I really like for like cover because it's got like a square bill on it. The only thing is with that is you don't have the long cast with it. If you could cast that thing a mile, oh my gosh, I think would crazily catch bass. And then they got the new Maverick, and I've been throwing that a ton this year. I used to throw a Megabass 110. Everybody does. I don't even carry the 110s in my boat no more. I still carry the 110 plus one.
Come on.
I swear to you. No joke. I throw the 110 plus one still. I love that plug, but the Maverick has taken over my 110 spot. Ask Wheeler about it. It does catch them. I have caught a lot of bass on them.
You said, we're good. We don't need any 110s in the boat.
I do. Yeah, I was like,
see, I had this with Mike McClellan, who when he can, we're sponsored by Spro, but when he came out with the Rock Crawler, he's like, no need for the wiggle wart anymore. And I'm like, oh, come on, Mike. You know, you still got a box of warts in the boat. Like, I don't care who you are. Like, okay. Interesting. And then I would assume you're going to leave it up to everyone else to do their homework to figure out what other ones they need in the boat.
100%.
Yeah. I'm not a rookie at this. I've been doing this long enough. There's no need to give all the juice up. I'm going to let you go. Like I said, I really appreciate you doing this. Before you do, I do want to dive into real quick. I mentioned halfway through the year, basically next week after this Florida swing, which is crazy to imagine how fast the year has gone. But you go into the St. John's River. There's a bunch of guys that haven't fished the St. John's River before. It's changed a lot since the back of the days when you saw 95 guys trying to catch bedding fish out of eelgrass and power poling around in one specific area. Practice is just Tuesday and Wednesday, and then you guys get after it Thursday. You're supposed to be on the water today. Everyone's trying to catch John Garrett on the Harris chain right now. Is this going to be wildly unpredictable, and are we going to see a real tournament that's up in the air with as vast and big as that fisheries is and how much it's changed over the past 10 years?
I think so. It's changed dramatically in the last 2 years. And we have 2 days of practice. So short in practice, but it's really short because we don't have an off day after practice. So it's like, if you want to get off the water and rig your rods to get kind of rested for Thursday, you're not really fishing 2 full days, daylight till dark. That's usually, this body of water is huge. I mean, from Jacksonville to south of Astor to the 44 bridge down there.
Yeah,
it's like 100 miles. I mean, it's a big body water.
And then you have areas that you have to idle for tons of miles so you don't mow down a manatee. There's all sorts of stuff on that fish. Yeah,
it's a very different fishery. I think it'll set up different that you're going to kind of have to land on in the day and a half of practice. So that's the thing. It's kind of, you better be ready for it. It's going to fish different. I am curious how it's going to fish. I'm curious to see how healthy the fishery is. and kind of what stage they're in. I think it's going to surprise us kind of how we catch them this week.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention, give me a little rundown on what it's like fishing the NPFL. I would assume you're going to say positive things since you've made about $500,000 over the last couple of years there, but I always call the NPFL, it's like the cat with nine lives. Every time you think it's dead, it just comes back. And right now it seems like it's as healthy as it's ever been. And you got a bunch of guys who really like fishing over there.
It's a great time. It's a great atmosphere, great group of people running the organization, and they mean well. And that's the thing, they take care of everybody. And I think they are going to be really successful. I think they're going to be like the old FLW where it was just cool to fish. You know, when the guys were fishing in the elites and they were fishing the FLW tour at the time, and you could just see, like, as long as they kind of work together and they don't conflict, if everybody just kind of sticks in their lane and just worries about themselves and not tries to compete with everybody, then there's enough room for it. I mean, there's so many people who want to bass fish. I mean, how many people bass fish in the country as a whole? Mm-hmm. There's enough room at the top for another organization, and it's good fishing over there. I mean, I make my living fishing. I can't fish any tournaments at home, really. Most of the tournaments have no pro rules and stuff like that. So I have to kind of travel, and I like the no information rule. I like the 3 days of practice. It's kind of, you know, how you've trained yourself to fish a bass tournament, and that's kind of what I like doing. I mean, it's showing up 3 days of practice and then getting after it.
You've won two or three?
Three now.
Do they still give out those giant ass trophies that you can't figure out where to put? Like, where do you put those things? They're bigger than a classic trophy.
They are humongous. They are pretty cool trophies. Yeah, like the first one was like, oh, and then now you're like, it's kind of, yeah, you got to shuffle some stuff around. I'm building a garage though, so hopefully I'll make some room for them.
Anybody over there that we need to keep an eye on that has impressed you over your time? I'm putting you on the spot right now.
It's true. There's a lot of young guys over there who really are going to catch them. There's not one person right now that sticks out that I'm like, mm-hmm. whoa. Will Harkins, though, he's one of those young guys, too. He cracks them. He stays on them, especially if they're biting. If you can catch him on board, he's going to catch
them. You broke his heart at Lanier, didn't you?
I mean, that's why they call me the Dream Crusher.
All right. Anything else you want to get in here before I let you go, Patrick?
Nope.
I do. I will say it is good to have you on BTL. I apologize. I had nothing. You came up to me and, after the classic.
I had to give you a hard time.
And I was like, no, you're welcome. So I went back. You have been on BTL before, just not since I took the show over from Jeffries. But
how long ago was that?
Two
and a half.
It is. And then I started looking at all these stats and I'm like, holy cow, like three century belts, the largest margin of victory in Elite Series history. The lowest you've finished in the Angler of the Year since then is 16th. I mean, your last 4 years are third, fourth, fifth, and third. We already went through all the other stats you've had. I mean, dude, you have had a career in 6 years. There's no doubt about it.
No complaints.
I mean, how important is an Angler of the Year and a Classic Trophy to you? Is that what's driving you now, or is that something that's like, hey, it'll just come if I just keep doing what I'm doing?
Both. That's what's circled on the list. You know, that's what we're shooting for. That's what we want to achieve. And I feel like when it's your time, it's your time. 100%. Like, you can't force anything. And when it's your time in the light, you'll get it. Just be ready for that opportunity.
When you do win a classic, pull your crystal ball out. The three baits you're most likely to win it on. Like, when you picture yourself winning a classic, what are the baits that you're going to win the classic on? And we'll circle back to this probably in the next 3 years. And
I'm going
to
say a jerk bait just because I always catch them jerking, I feel like. I'm going to go with a Texas rig, and then I'm going to go with those two, maybe. Just those two.
A jerkbait and a Texas rig.
Let's go. Or worm. It'll be – I'm going to catch them. I'm going to set the hook on them.
Whether I'm flipping,
or I'm like Texas rigging a 3/8 ounce old monster, or whether I'm planking like a 3/8 ounce Z-crawl or something like that. Like, it's going to be on a worm. And it could be a wacky worm, too. It could be a shaky head. I'm going to catch them worming. I like – that's the stuff that catches bass.
Worm still catches a bunch of fish.
Worm still catches
10-inch ribbon tail, 7-inch shaky head.
Yep.
5-inch wacky rig trick bait.
Game over.
Huh. I like it. All right, Patrick, thank you very much. I know. Are you already down at St. John's?
Yep, we showed up yesterday.
You're dialed in.
No, not yet. That's why I'm about to go mess with my boat for a little bit. Export on my waypoints, import my St. John waypoints, clean my boat up, rods everywhere, rig a couple rods. I'm going to go do some fishing this afternoon on a little lake around the house, hopefully, and just get geared up and ready to roll.
There it is. I appreciate it, man.
Yep. Thanks, Matt.
All right. See ya. All right. That is Patrick Walters, one of the best going right now, without a doubt. All right. We're going to take a break. I teased it. I spent quite a bit of time looking at the archives and getting the stats together, but Jacob Wheeler back-to-back and then wins his eighth regular season BPT event by 31 pounds yesterday on Dale Hollow. We just had Jacob on. He talked a little bit about it. I'm going to use some stats to try to put what's going on over on the BPT specifically with Jacob Wheeler into perspective. It's BTL on a Monday. We'll be back right after this.
Your early morning mentality is your every hour mentality. All gas, no brakes. Focus, purpose, power. Destined for the water, but confident everywhere else. A calming buzz before the storm, truth of nature itself. You can't catch lightning in a bottle. There's a limit out there, but it's not with your gear. Unrelenting power delivery. Unparalleled weight savings. Keeping you on the water, whether you run a 9.9 or out scoping your best 5. In this rare air, there's power in the silence. It's a mindset, thinking only of the things that matter and freeing your mind from the things that you trust.
Get the best patterns backed by tournament data. Start by finding the best 10% of your lake. Know exactly what to look for and what to throw. After that, you just put them in the boat. Try the Deep Dive app today.
Look at that beast right there.
Fishing isn't just a hobby, it's an obsession. Whether it's blazing hot or bitterly cold, bright sunshine, raining, or even snowing, someplace, somewhere, there's a fish that's ready to bite. And as the angler, you need baits that will catch the fish anywhere, anytime, no matter the conditions. From throwing topwaters to cranking the depths, know the baits to throw. Choose Spro.
Having confidence in your tackle while on the water is one of the main things to success, in my opinion. In the last couple years with Denali, I've had just that. From anything from spinning rods, casting rods, tungsten products, even now to casting and spinning reels, I have the confidence to go out there and get the job done and know that all my equipment is going to handle it and do it just the way I want it. The thing about Denali is you've got great quality products at a great price point, so make sure you check them out.
All right, welcome back, BTL on a Monday. Going to touch on the third stage of the BPT that just went down on Dale Hollow, one of the very cool fisheries. A lot of smallmouth caught, a lot of largemouth caught, primarily a minnow derby, an offshore derby. There were some guys that had very good tournaments that were not relying on forward-facing sonar, but when it was all said and done, roughly a 31-pound victory, Jacob Wheeler, 116 pounds, 6 ounces in the final two rounds to outlast Michael Neal. And I was thinking, it was a blowout. It was like a 31-pound win. So I went back and I was thinking, man, they did the five-fish format last year in 2023, and then they went back to the every fish counts format. In that press release where they went back into the every fish counts format, Boyd Duckett was quoted as saying, a brand new person that doesn't even know what professional bass fishing is just wants to see excitement and competition. And there's nothing that highlights that greater than every fish counts. So between Raybird, Santee Cooper, Toledo Bend, Santee Cooper, Red Crest, and Dale Hollow, the average margin of victory so far on the final day, 27.75 pounds. It's been a blowout in three of the four. 44-pound margin of victory in the first stage. It was a 5-pound margin of victory for Wheeler at Santee Cooper. That was close. And then Red Crest, Connell won by over 31 pounds, and then a 31-pound win here on Dale Hollow. So absolute domination over on the BPT with the Every Fish Counts format. But with Jacob Wheeler's eighth regular season win on the BPT since the 2019 season, it now is eight consecutive regular season tournaments, seven regular season tournaments, one Red Crest tournament that Jacob Wheeler has finished inside the top 10. That in itself is historic, not to mention, I think the three wins, two or three wins during that. So I went back through the Bass archives and tried to figure out the next closest guy with the number of consecutive top 10s for what Wheeler is doing. Yes, I know it's an 80 boat field as opposed to a lot of those guys in the early days, the KVDs, the Kluns. You're talking invitationals that had 250 plus boats in them, but you also had some E50 eras. You had some postseason eras. The Classic only has 56. So I just was looking for eight consecutive top 10 finishes at the top level. And twice KVD has done four top 10s in a row in 2006 and 2008. But his longest streak in the illustrious career of KVD that I could find was six. And that came during the 2010-2011 season to finish the 2010 season and then to start the 2011 season, six consecutive top 10s. Now, two of those were 12 angler fields because it was the postseason tournaments, and then he kicked the next one off with a 50 boat Bassmaster Classic. So you could say, I mean, it was pretty much guaranteed as long as he didn't finish last, two of those top 10s, but six for KVD. And then I said, well, you know, Skeet had that incredible run in 2010. So I went back and looked at him, his deal, and in 2010 Skeet had five consecutive top 10 finishes, which was absolutely unheard of in regular season Bassmaster Elite Series competition. But like I said, right now we're looking at Jacob Wheeler. And if you go back to the 2023 Bass Pro Tour season, he finished 75th, which was dang near last in April on stage three. And then he went first, third, eighth. Then he kicked off this season with a fourth and a first, then he finished sixth in Red Crest, and then he came back with another first this past week on Dale Hollow. Insane what he's doing. He is an angler who is in the prime of his career right now, who is doing things that have never been done with a rod and reel as far as consistency at the top. I try to stay away and just do subjective or objective stats. That's as objective as you can get to kind of put things into perspective. Here's what I hope. I hope that these stats are not I'll say the word compromised because of the changing of the format and because of the split that they're not marginalized because of how much things have changed on Major League Fishing and the uncertainty of the next 10 years, kind of what we'll look back on and where that will stand. But right now, the way it's going, there's never been anyone, including Kevin or Rick or Roland or Bill or Skeet, Larry Nixon, that's done what he is currently in the midst of right now over on the BPT. And regardless of your thoughts on the Bass Pro Tour and how it's done and how much publicity it has and who's watching it, that's pretty damn impressive. So congratulations, Jacob Wheeler, on that. And then also big shout out to Patrick Walters for taking over an hour out of his day to jump on BTL to discuss a number of different things. Man, if they're going to do like a full swing or like a Big Brother documentary on a house where you take like cameras and bring them in and talk, like there'd been some talk that there was some things that potentially happening over on the BPT side with some big time documentaries and kind of following. We've seen a lot like with the Formula One has one out now, obviously Full Swing. Well, Full Swing's two season. The Formula One has been out for 5 or 6 years now. But these kind of Netflix or app-based, streaming-based documentaries, there's been some talk of them in the fishing world. That would be a great house. That'd be a really good house with Patrick Walters, Justin Hamner, Cobb, LaHue, and Clint Davis. You know, talk about, you got the reigning classic champ in there, one of the top five in the world in there, probably one of the best shallow water fishermen, and then two likable guys in LaHue and Clint Davis. That would be a reality show that I would watch. So, all right, that is all we have for today. Kind of a interesting schedule with BTL this week with the Elite Series back on the St. John's River this week, and then the BPT wrapping up, working on a guest list for tomorrow and Wednesday. Definitely know that on Thursday, though, we will have Frank Scalish on the show. I do want to kind of close the show and say thanks to everybody who purchased the St. Jude Bass Fishing Saves Lives t-shirts. Very good feedback from that. And we'll have a grand total on all of the donations that go directly to St. Jude's for that. But as far as Monday, that's all we got. Same place, same time tomorrow. BTL. We'll talk to everybody then. Later.